Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Gail Seiler, together with Greta Anderson. Hello, Greta.
Hi, Gail. For those of you out there in listener land, just a reminder that this week is Bike to Work Week, and there's something going on right now at this moment, 7 a.m., until 9 a.m., the Ames City Council will kick off Bike to Work Week with a continental breakfast for all you bike commuters. That's at Ames City Hall today from 7 to 9. So if you're on your way,
stop by there.
Yes.
And we'll have some other announcements of things going on for Bike to Work Week later in the show.
So today's show is devoted to stories about teaching and learning, and we'll see that school and learning can take many forms.
In the second part of the show, we're going to be talking about homeschooling, which is increasing in popularity, both nationally and locally. We'll hear from Shelley Larson, who is the Home School Assistance Project Coordinator with the Ames Community School District, and from Isaiah Riker, who is 17 years old and has been homeschooled his whole life. And we'll be joined in the studio by Sarvinder Neighborhouse, who has been active in the homeschooling community in Ames, and Craig Hastings, who knows a great deal about the history of homeschooling.
But first, we have another story about an educational experience that's off the beaten path. In fact, if anything, it's about students who might be beating that path themselves. It's about the students in Mike Todd's environmental science class, whose assignment for the spring semester is to make a positive impact in the community.
That sounds like a lofty goal.
Well, actually, Mike gives them a lot of guidance, but they learn a lot, and it shows. I went down to the Ames Public Library last Wednesday evening when the students were presenting their work as poster presentations. They form small groups and often work on projects that have already been started by a previous year's class. Mike has been at this for 6 years, and he says that the students either do something to transform the environment, particularly the natural environment around the school, or they create media to educate the public about environmental issues. In either case, there's a lot of learning involved. Actually, I learned that if I want to eat local, my diet is terribly deficient in pawpaw fruit. I learned from one student, William Buttermore, that the pawpaw is native to the Midwest, albeit a little south of us, maybe Missouri, and yet nobody's growing it here, except for Ames High.
So Ames High has a pawpaw tree?
As of this spring, yes, they have planted a pawpaw in their permaculture garden.
What else have the students been up to?
Well, let's give them a listen.
My name is Macy Myers, and we created an informational sign for the Ames High milkweed production plot. We actually attract monarchs to Ames every year because of the amount of milkweed that we have, which is a big part of our project, is spreading the word on the monarchs and how the milkweed really helps them out. It's taken months for us to start. We've been plowing and putting down mulch, and it's been a very long, strenuous process, but we have one, and we plan on putting milkweed in there as soon as we can, and our hope is to spread the amount of milkweed in Ames. And so far, it's been pretty successful. I'm excited.
So do you have a lot of seedlings planted of milkweed?
We do. Right now, they're in the Ames High greenhouse while we get the plot ready, but we plan on putting those in there pretty soon.
And then you mentioned spreading it around Ames. Are you going to share these seedlings with other people, residents of Ames?
We do usually have milkweed seeds available for people to plant, but so our goal is just to get as many people as we can to put it in their yards, just reach out, because it is possible to have milkweed at your own house, even not just at Ames High, so hopefully people get planting.
Thanks, Macy.
You're welcome.
I'm Aspen McNace.
And I'm Travis Juergens.
And we've been working on the Ames High Outdoor Classroom, putting in new rocks and compost and putting seeds and grasses down to grow.
What kind of grasses?
We have buffalo grass and just other native prairie plants we're putting in there. But right now, the main ones we have seeded are the buffalo grasses. And we're going to work on getting those other ones in the next couple weeks. It's been a little tough, especially being so muddy, for us to get the seed down, and because we don't want the compost to wash away before we get it seeded. So it's been a little bit of a challenge. But
And those limestone blocks I see in your poster are quite attractive. Where did you get them from?
We got them from Country Landscape here in Ames. And to get the money, we made a proposal to our principal and came up with the prices for the rocks, and we were able to get the money from the school.
How'd you move the stones into place?
So the smaller stones, the 2x4x2s, we moved by hand just with us and the other group members. And for the large table piece, they had to bring it in with a forklift. We had professionals come in for that big one, but we did lay down some gravel down there before we put the table piece so it wouldn't slide down or erode or anything like that.
And this is a project that's been ongoing, am I right?
Yes, they started this last year, I want to say. They put the stones down last year, I know, and then we just finished it.
I'm Sarah Noble.
I'm Haley Tebbett, and our project is the Plastic Bag Waste Reduction Project here in Ames, and the goal of this project is to start a ban towards disposable plastic bags here in the Ames community. We've participated in multiple events to educate the community because we feel that it's really important for the Ames community to understand like the significant effect of our plastic consumption as a community. And we also hosted a mini sustainability fair here at the library for the younger children.
So you want to ban plastic bags. Has this been done anywhere else?
It's been done in a few cities in California, and it's been actually in China. At least a fee has been placed on them, so then a lot of people can't pay the fee, so the consumption of plastic bags goes down drastically.
Okay, and you have a sign-up sheet here. What's that for?
It's a petition. It's a continuation of last year's effort, and they started a petition, and we're just trying to add to it to gain more momentum for this movement, I guess.
And I understand that you spoke with some of the leaders of Ames about this. Can you describe what that was like?
We've collaborated with Mary Rankins from ISU, and she's in charge of a lot of the sustainability things at ISU, and she's helped us. And we've also met with the mayor, and she's been very supportive, and she would also like to move towards a ban. So, yeah.
Great job. Thanks very much.
You're listening to Local Talk, and those were the voices of some Ames High students at last Wednesday's Environmental Impact Project Showcase at the library. And these were students in Mike Todd's environmental science class, who have been learning all year about the different impacts human beings have on the environment.
It sounds just really amazing what they're doing. They're doing milkweed production. They've built an outdoor classroom. They have this campaign to ban plastic bags. It almost sounds like an outdoor trades class or a citizen curriculum of some type.
Funny you should say that. Here's Mike Todd, their fearless leader, describing what he is up to and why.
The students are explaining to the community how they've been involved with the community this year in these community environmental impact projects. So, you know, they've been working with professionals. They've been solving problems in our community. They've been creating things that are educational for our community, making environmental changes. And those are sort of the guidelines of the projects. The students have to kind of seek out professionals in the community surrounding some issue or personal or career interest or something that they're passionate about, and then I work with them to make it into a project where they're going to learn a lot of things. They're going to learn that, you know, they set a bunch of goals and it doesn't work out like that ever. You have to be able to be flexible, and you know failure is just normal. It's part of the game. You just got to keep going, and we got to change things, and nothing ever works out like you think it will. You know, there's a lot of lessons learned, and then they also learn about some aspect of the environment in some much deeper way because they're working with a professional. You know, they're making a sign, so they have to work with content experts about, you know, the milkweed seed production plot. And so they worked with Dr. John Pleasance and Nathan Brockman at Ryman Gardens and to develop this. And, you know, then they had to work with a graphic designer to how to lay out all this information and then eventually go through the, you know, 14 iterations of the sign, which is normal, before you actually, you know, print it out and put it next to the milkweed seed production plot we've been making this semester. You know, I mean, so that was a project to make something that was going to explain another project that we're working on. So a lot of them have connections between each other and things like that.
It seems pretty obvious why you're doing it. It's a great learning tool. How do the students respond when you present this idea to them?
Better than the first year I ever did this. The first year, actually, we made them year-long projects, and that was crazy from the start. Actually, it was a bad idea. They weren't ready. They didn't have most skills. They'd never done things like this before. I mean, all of them are juniors and seniors, which is kind of sad. You'd think, man, somewhere along the lines, they've dealt with this sort of nebulousness and you know, real-world type thing, but no. So I realized early on, first few years, that we had to do a bunch of things as a class together that first semester on projects. So we do a lot of class impact projects where we work together and we say, hey, we got to contact somebody. So I stand up there and say, well, what should I do? Where can we look? We got to send them an email. Okay, put up the projector. How are we going to write this email? How do we start? I mean, they have no clue how to do anything like this. Send an email. I mean, it's just, you'd think common knowledge. Nope. I had them send, you know, when they're in the beginning of the projects, even these, the second semester when we're working on these, you know, I have them send me draft emails when they're going to send them to people in the community so that I can look at them and help them. And there's still things I'm helping them word and how to say it, you know, when you're trying to get somebody to help you. And I mean, these are all things that we want them to know when they're adults and part of our community, you know, so I think that's important. And they form a lot of connections in the community through this event, you know, and so they're connected to the community in some way, shape, or form instead of being high school students and never really doing anything in the community. And I think that they get excited about a lot of things in the environmental science class as it's going along. And so then they do have these passions, and so they do want to make changes, and they just don't know how, and they don't have a lot of these skills. And so, I mean, it is no surprise to me why a lot of people that exist in the world don't act on a lot of things that they want to act on because they've never learned how. We've never taught them. In our school system, there's no standard for, you know, these sorts of things. They don't exist. So, you know, we had to create this, and I think Ames is better off because it does exist.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no problem. And next year we're going to take this to the next level. We have a new course at the high school, the Integrated Capstone Seminar, and it's going to be only for seniors, and it involves not only the environmental science class, but they'll get credit for government, sociology, and an English class. And we'll have 2.5 hours every day for an entire year to work on the intersections of the environment and writing and government policy and society and workers and food and agriculture and these sorts of things. And then to do these projects with a bit more time is kind of exciting to think about. So we got this plan for next year already on the calendar, and it'll be neat. So.
That's very exciting. And you mentioned that next week you and one of your students are going to Washington?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The week after next, we're going to D.C., so he won a national most informative award for the Lexicon of Sustainability's Project Localize. And we're going to go out to D.C. with the Lexicon of Sustainability group, and we're going to talk to some legislators and some policymakers and explain sort of the project. And there's students all over the country doing this Project Localize. We piloted it with the Lexicon group a year ago. I took 5 students to D.C. with just me and them. And so we were the first people to ever do this. And so now I'm getting to go back with another student. And there's people from all over the country that are doing it now. New York City, L.A., you know, all over the country. And, you know, this is kind of neat. I might be the only non-art teacher that's doing it, but I feel like I can hold my own. I don't know. We'll see.
That was Mike Todd, and at this point, I feel like I need to break in and explain about this Lexicon of Sustainability, something I think our listeners will be very interested mm-hmm. in, but it's a little more complicated. So just one of the groups, of the student groups in Mike Todd's class, was pursuing this particular agenda, the Lexicon of Sustainability, and that's an organization out of Petaluma, California, San Francisco area. It's this visually fresh, rootsy yet sophisticated multimedia way to promote knowledge and awareness of local food systems and local food concepts. The organization has short films. They make presentations. But since local food is, in fact, local, they need collaborators all over the country and world to help with this venture.
And so these high school students are their collaborators.
Exactly. So Project Localize, which is the name of the high school linkage program, has students identify local producers and their sustainable practices, then turn their findings into information artworks to share with the community to illustrate one phrase from the lexicon, the vocabulary of sustainability. So this information art they produce appears in local pop-up shows. So they'll develop a library of these posters and present them maybe at at Wheatsfield, but also at events here and there. It involves a lot of extra student time, but Mike Todd acknowledged that, but they're willing to put the time in.
Sounds very cool.
Yeah. So we do have one student's voice, the one who is winning the award, and we'll just hear what his project was about. He was working with this project, Localize Lexicon of Sustainability.
The main goal of our project, which is Project Localize, is to create informational artwork to educate the public of local different types of methods of farming that some people might not even know exist. And so what we do is we take these photographs and make them into one big image to try to show this farming method. And what we do is we go on these photo shoots to these local farms, and we take pretty much like thousands of photos at their farms. Mine I worked on was Lee Madison's, Lee's Greens down in Nevada. And my topic for that was four-season harvest, which is something that most people don't know actually exists right now, but it's a much better, sustainable, and much healthier way of growing food.
And explain why. What is four-season harvest?
It's basically you're growing your fruits and vegetables all year round. So, like, he has these all set up in greenhouses. His strawberries, he has sweet turnip. He can grow these when it's 0 degrees out, and they turn out really, really good. They're really fresh.
Is his greenhouse heated?
Yes. All of his greenhouses are heated.
So that was Brandon Johnson talking about his Project Localized poster, and we'll have his poster up on our website as the cover picture for this broadcast. But for our listeners, just so you can picture this, the posters are all very kind of have the same aesthetic. They're told what font to use, and it's black and white, shades of gray. If you've driven past Wheatsfield on Northwest, you'll have seen these images on the sides of the building. And one very interesting thing about it is all of the words on the posters are the exact words of the producer. So they hold out a microphone and let the producer ramble on about what they're up to, and then they pick the choice words from that monologue to explain what this concept, in Brandon's case, it was four-season harvest, is about. So pretty cool. So these images are really meant to be kind of conversation starters, you know. And in fact, I had a great conversation with a group of kids that you'll see pictured around that poster. They were very excited about this work, and in fact, that was universal across the kids in the library with their presentations. They were very excited.
And Greta, your story is a really nice connection with our next story, which is on homeschooling, because it shows a teacher working within the school system to try to kind of think outside the box in terms of projects that students get involved in. And to some extent, that's what some folks who choose to homeschool are trying to do for their learners. So it'll be a good connection with the story we're going to be having in a little bit.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Keep it, the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. You go in, drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Drums loud and bold.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. The song you just heard was School Days by Chuck Berry. Today's show is about teaching and learning, and now we're turning to the topic of homeschooling. Last week, I spoke with Shelley Larson, who is the Homeschool Assistance Project Coordinator with the Ames Community School District. I began our conversation by asking her to explain her role in working with families who are homeschooling their children.
I oversee the whole program. We have 280 kids in our program this year, and I just try to keep the ball rolling. That's my job. Every year we have more kids. I keep thinking that the day will come that we won't have an increase, and every single year we have an increase of about 10%. So we have kids from Gilbert, we have some from Boone, we have some from Ankeny, Huxley, from anywhere in the surrounding area, Nevada. So they can open enroll. That's a law in Iowa that you can open enroll to another school district, and homeschool is involved in that as well. We have 10 teachers on our staff. They're all Iowa certified teachers. They're all also, they have been or still are homeschooling moms. I think once we added up our years and found out that we have about 130 years of experience among the 10 of us. And so we go out to the homes and see what the families are doing, help them set goals, help them choose curriculum, help them with any problems that they're having, or if they just have some concerns or they're not sure which direction to go with something. We help them with that. We might help them with teaching methods. And then we meet with the family. We make four contacts a quarter with each of our families. And then we also offer enrichment classes. So for different age groups, they meet at different times at the building that we are renting. Mm-hmm. And then we also do field trips. We do some parent training. We do spelling bee and geography bee. And one of the classes that we do is toying with technology, which is a lot of fun. That's with the engineering class at Iowa State. And then we also do PE with the kids. And part of our PE classes, our younger kids, K through 4, do PE with the college students that are working on either their teaching degree or their PE degree. Yeah. So elementary education or PE.
So contrary to what people might think, that children who are homeschooled just stay at home and learn by themselves, right. That doesn't sound like what's going on.
That's not true for most families. Most families are very involved in the community and involved with other activities, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, their church, all the sports in Ames. Many of our kids are dual enrolled, which means they do some of their work at home and they do some of their work at school, which is a great privilege. In Iowa, you can do that. In some states, you can't. But our kids have the freedom to be enrolled in two places. So sometimes, like especially in the high school, junior high and high school, they might take math and science at the school and do the rest of their work at home. They can also be in all of the sports. If they want to play football or basketball or soccer or whatever they're interested in, they can be part of that as well.
Shelley said that her program serves 71 students who are open enrolled, meaning they come from other districts, and 67 who are dual enrolled in homeschooling and in a traditional school for a course or two. She also explained that school districts in Iowa are not required to provide assistance for homeschooling or to have a position like hers. And some districts choose not to. But with the option of open enrollment, families can enroll with the Ames School District and obtain support.
So that explains why they have those open enrolled kids. Ames has the support so that the parents enroll their students in there.
Exactly, yep.
Did you ask Shelley why people choose to homeschool? I can imagine there would be multiple reasons.
I did, and here's what she had to say.
You know, I think the reasons are as diverse as our families are. Well, I always say that we deal with the bell curve just like everybody else. You know, we have students on one side of the bell curve who are really struggling with school, and so parents pull them out and feel like they can give them that one-on-one attention that they need to get them over the difficulties, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's extremely successful. We've had many successes with that. We also have kids on the other side of the bell curve who are so accelerated that they don't really fit into school very well, and so they just, their parents can give them curriculum at home that they can just keep going. They don't have to wait for their classmates, so they can just move on at their own speed, and a lot of families really like that. Many of our families, I think, homeschool because they want to have a faith-based curriculum. Mm-hmm. They want to put that in with their, what they're teaching their kids, their worldview. That's not everybody that homeschools, but there's a large group of people that's their intention. And I think the main one is that they just want to have that relationship and be an integral part of what their children are learning. Homeschoolers are avoiding some things, too, and that is, as much as we don't want to think that there's bullying in our mm-hmm. schools, there is. There's very foul language out on the playground. They avoid some of that, and I don't think there are very many families that homeschool just to avoid the negative things of school. But that is a benefit. You avoid some of those really negative, hurtful interactions that happen sometimes at school to some kids. We do definitely have families that are very critical of the way things are being done in school. We also have families who are not the least bit critical, in fact, praise what's being done in the schools, but just still want to have their kids at home. I would have to say 99% of our families are extremely diligent about how they homeschool. There is always that 1% that we wish they would do more, or they are homeschooling their child because they couldn't get them to go to school. They were truant, and so they've decided to homeschool because that's the only way to be legal, but they're not really doing the job they need to be doing at home. And we will always have those families that we have to deal with, just like they have to deal with them in the public schools. We have some that choose homeschooling as a way to avoid legal problems, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that they're committed to homeschooling.
We're listening to Shelley Larson, who is the director of the Homeschool Assistance Program in the Ames District. Shelley also emphasized the importance of students learning about what interests them and being involved in long-term projects that really motivate them to explore their learning. Because standardized testing has become so important in schools now, I asked her whether homeschooled children have to take all the standardized tests and also how homeschoolers are graded.
They don't. They're not required. The legal requirement was that they either had to have a supervising teacher oversee their program, or they could take the standardized test, the Iowa, it's called Iowa Assessment now instead of Iowa Test of Basic Skills, take Iowa assessments and score in above the 30th percentile in every category. Mm-hmm. If they scored below the 30th percentile, then the Department of Education might step in. They didn't always, but they might. And require or request that they get that the family would get connected with a certified teacher and work on that particular area. But like I say, now that families can be completely independent, they don't have to do that at all. We do offer through our program, we offer the Iowa assessments, and many of our children take them, but they're not required by law to take. Oh, grades. Children don't need to get grades from their parents. They just need to do the work for, say we have a first grader. Well, we'll do the first grade work, and then they move on to second grade and on to third grade and on to fourth grade. And at some point, if they want to put the children in school, they're allowed to just go into school. We just take the word of the parents that they have had the previous year curriculum, and they will be ready when they go into whatever grade the parents want to put them in.
So, Gail, it's interesting. Shelley mentioned that the kids in homeschooling don't have to take the standardized tests. I'm wondering whether the increase in homeschooling might be related to or a reaction to the concomitant increase in emphasis on testing in schools.
It could be. That'll be something to pay attention to. The final thing I asked Shelley about was what happens when homeschooled students apply to and go to university.
Surprisingly, there is no problem with that. Kids can take their ACT test or SAT tests. We encourage our families with high school students to keep a transcript for them at home. We've also talked with the admissions counselors at Iowa State, and they said grades are not going to matter to us. Well, they want to see what the students have studied. They want to see all the literature that they've read, whatever curriculum that they've used, the publishers and the books, volunteer work that they've done, any of those kinds of things. And then if they've taken any classes at the high school, of course, those will have grades, and those will be considered. And then there's their ACT and SAT scores. people who are truly committed to homeschooling their children, we find that their children do very well as they move into school, whether that be at the high school level or the college level, they do fine. In fact, lots of colleges like to have homeschooled kids come to them because they're very self-motivated learners. They know how to take a hold of a project mm-hmm. and deal with it on their own. They're not looking for somebody to hold their hand while they walk through it. Because at home, that's what they have to do. There's usually more than one child there, mm-hmm. and they are expected to take what mom gives them to work on and get busy on it on their own.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm Greta Anderson, one of your co-hosts, together with Gail Seiler. And that was Shelley Larson talking about her role in assisting the homeschooling community in Ames. We've been joined in the studio by Sarvinder Naberhaus, a local author and someone who has been involved in homeschooling in Ames in a number of roles, and by Craig Hastings, who is an attorney in Ames and has also been studying the history of homeschooling and working on a book about that topic. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Craig, let's start with a bit of a historical perspective. What is the history of modern homeschooling in this area, in a nutshell?
Well, it actually goes back a long way, because when the settlers first came into Iowa, which is in the 1820s and 30s, they were pretty much all literate. Iowa had the highest literacy rate of any state. It's usually, and of course it wasn't a state then. And one of the sources I found said that he came in, a Swedish immigrant, and there was no school in the area where they settled, so they had to wait a while, but he said it didn't mean that the kids were illiterate. During the years waiting for the schoolhouse, there were no illiterate immigrants. Every child of my age could read, write, and spell in Swedish before he entered to school. So it turns out that home education started way back when. The modern movement for home education, homeschooling, probably for most historians who've looked at it, started in the 1970s. I've always been puzzled why it didn't start in the 60s when we had the hippies and the turn-in, turn-on, drop-out, and don't-trust-anybody-over-30s movement. But you can't find any cases. The earliest cases in Iowa were in the 1970s, although there's an Ames case from 1936 where State v. Grist, the father took the kid out of school because he didn't like what was going on, and the school district said you're going to be disciplined, and it went up to the court as to whether they had the power to do so. So Ames was kind of at the cutting edge of parents resisting the public schoolers and the educationists, as I call them. So homeschooling's been around forever in Iowa.
And is it more common in certain parts of Iowa than other parts?
I couldn't tell you that. I really don't know.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering.
I suspect it's probably higher. The early cases that we handled, and there were about 25 of them. I was involved about 17 of the homeschool and church school cases in the 70s and 80s. And many of the early cases were in university areas. So maybe that's one way you could look at it, but I don't really know which is higher and which is lower.
Okay, so you were involved in some of the legal proceedings around homeschooling.
Oh, yes, yeah. I have a chart in here. I can show you the 25 cases that I know of, and I was involved in about 17 of them.
And can you give us just the highlights of what the issues were?
Primarily, it was the issue of certified teacher. We didn't want to have the certified teacher requirement imposed on us, and the state insisted, and so we went to court. I actually had two clients, the Reverend Mrs. T.N. Taylor in Mount Pleasant, who served 30 days in jail each for not complying with the requirement that they have a certified teacher 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And they couldn't do it, and they didn't want to do it because basically the school district had told them that we can't teach your kids, try it yourself. And that happened a lot in Iowa, where the school district told the parents, take them home and teach them. And when they did that, then the school district filed truancy charges against them.
Interesting. Yes. So, and then there's just been changes recently that Shelley mentioned just, I guess, 2 years ago that further changed the legal requirements.
The big changes happened after the Taylor case. I can show you news articles that where the legislature said we can't have good Iowans going to jail over this. And so they were actually served in jail, I think, 87, and the statute was changed around 92 or something like that, 91, 92. That little, liberalized it. But what's interesting is the early law just said they had to have instruction. It didn't say certified teachers. It just had instruction similar to the public school.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the big issue was certification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in addition to the reasons Shelley Larson mentioned, would you say there are other reasons why people choose to homeschool their children, and have those reasons changed over time? And then I'd like to bring Sarvinder in with her perspective
Friends of mine used to call the homeschoolers, they were either religious homeschoolers or granolas.
Okay.
Which referred to kind of the hippie segment of our population. And that's why I was always surprised it didn't start in the 60s. But there were secular homeschoolers. A famous case was up in Decorah. Professors at the college up there. And they took their kids out because they just thought they could teach them better. Most of the ones I dealt with were religious homeschoolers. They wanted to control what the kids were taught. But, you know, that's the history of education in England and the United States. It's a history of the tension between parental control mm-hmm. and the educationist control. And I can show you page after page of my book is going to be about that whole issue. Who controls who my kid is taught by and what they're taught. And that was a history of rural education in Iowa. The first schools were controlled by local boards, farmers, who hired the teacher, and they negotiated their salary and had, control over what was being taught.
Mm-hmm.
And the educationists thought, well, that can't be a good education. We need to have unified, consolidated schools. And that's when you start having the consolidated school districts, of which there's a sample on 169 over there south of Boone. There's an old consolidated school. It's out there sitting next to the road. It's been vacated, but that's what they started.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the battle all along, is who controls my child's education, some bureaucrat in Des Moines or local farmers? And the bureaucrats all said, well, it's those farmers are such cheapskates, they just don't want their taxes to go up to support a decent school.
And that still is a battle to some extent.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
School consolidation is a big battle in Iowa.
Yeah.
History.
Would you say that then the reasons, you mentioned religious and granola, as you called it, reasons, has that shifted or has that stayed about the same?
Well, Sarvinder could tell us a little more about today. My theory is back then it was the same. Most of the time it was maybe not religious motivation, but the people who were coming at it from a non-religious standpoint still wanted to control what their students were taught and how they were taught and by whom. And I think that's still the same thing.
So, Sarvinder, you homeschooled your children as well, and you worked as one of the support teachers that Shelley mentioned. She now has mm-hmm. a team of 10. So you served as one of those people. So you bring both those perspectives.
Right. I started I was a supervising teacher with Ames Schools. Mm-hmm. I worked with Mary Terpstra, who was pretty much the original founder. And then I had some parents that were homeschooling for religious reasons, and they asked me, actually, if I would apply to be Mary's helper. I didn't really seek it out. They sought me out. So I did that, and that's how I got involved. It could have been because my last name is Neighborhouse, and my sister-in-law and brother-in-law helped found NICH. They've been on the board for many years. And so a lot of times people would recognize that mm-hmm. name because of Julie and Gary, not because of me. But I was brought in to the homeschooling arena before my kids were old enough to homeschool, and it was a pretty new movement. That was back in the 90s. But I do remember people going to jail and articles and things like that.
Could you explain what NICH is, just for the listener?
Sure. It's the Network of Iowa Christian Home Educators, mm-hmm. and you can become a member. They put on a conference every year, usually around the beginning of June. So anyway, it's a support system, an organization.
Mm-hmm. So based on your experience then, because you've been involved with this for quite a while, talk about the reasons why people decide to homeschool, because it's a tremendous amount of work. So it's interesting that people make that commitment.
Yes. Well, I think originally it's the movement when I was involved and started out. It was because people wanted, for religious reasons mostly, parents wanted to be the authority for their children. They wanted to be the examples for their children. You know, I guess the reasons would be varied, you know, just and as individual people mm-hmm. are. But I think back then that was a lot of it. I think a lot of it was socialization. People would bring up a lot of things about socialization, that the kids aren't getting socialized. And my response would be, well, the parents don't want their kids to be socialized. They don't want certain aspects of the public school and socialization by your peers, people that are your age, or the bullying, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's come up, that's been an issue for a long time. I always think of, when I think of homeschooling and the original homeschoolers, I think of Laura Ingalls Wilder and how she lived in Iowa for a time, and how she would travel around the Midwest and she would go to school when she could. As a matter of fact, one of the books talks about how her father, Pa, was involved in starting a school and paying the teacher and getting all that set up back in the late 1880s and early 1900s. So that's my original, that's my person that I bring up as someone that successfully homeschooled would be Laura Ingalls Wilder, but she's also kind of my idol, so.
As an author. Yes. Yeah. Well, I also thought it would be interesting and important to get the perspective of a young person, so I was able to talk with Isaiah Riker, who came into the station on Saturday. He is 17 years old and lives in Ames, and he's been homeschooled his whole life. He is now continuing his homeschooling, and he is also taking courses at ISU and working. So we're just going to hear a short clip of that, and then maybe we can talk about what he has to say.
I have four siblings. I've got three younger sisters who are all being homeschooled right now, and an older brother who was homeschooled his entire schooling, and now he's in the Army right now. Most of the homeschoolers are technically dual-enrolled, mm-hmm. so they're open-enrolled to Ames, but then they can also do most of their work at home. And a lot of my friends go in and take, like, one or two classes at the high school. I've thought about taking some of the classes at the high school, but I haven't yet. I might next year. I have done some of their theater programs with them and done some plays with them. I'm taking some ISU classes right now. This semester I took Acting 101, and last semester I took Script Analysis.
Based on those classes, do you think it will be a challenge when you're in more traditional kinds of classes like at ISU?
Well, I did take one last semester. I think it was called Comprehensive Listening. It was a lot of sitting down, more than I'm used to, but it wasn't anything difficult, I'd say. Mm-hmm. It's like doing school, but you just sit there.
Uh-huh. And you don't have as much choice like you were talking about. You have to go at the assigned time.
Yeah.
So what would you say are the benefits of being homeschooled?
It really gives me a lot of freedom. I don't pick all the school I do, but I get to choose some topics. My mom will be like, oh, do you want to do algebra first or geometry first? And I like that. And I like running on my own schedule, too. And it gives me freedom to work. And I've got a job, and it also gives me freedom to do extracurricular things and volunteer places.
And would you say there are any downsides to being homeschooled?
There probably are. There's not less social activities, but you really have to get out there and find them.
So tell us about some of the social activities that you're involved in.
Well, Ames has a really good homeschool program where they have classes that homeschoolers can come and take. And that's during school hours. So I've met most of the homeschoolers in Ames, and I get to do things with them. And I'm in a play right now that's coming up.
Tell us about the play.
Well, I helped write it with a friend of mine and my mom. And now we're we're getting to help direct the play, too, and I get to act in the play. That's coming up May 17th, 18th, and 19th at Ames High. It's all homeschool kids. I think we've got 47 people in this play.
So what does your day look like?
It really varies. A lot of times I do school on the weekends, too. My mom doesn't really have assigned times that I have to do my school. She usually just assigns me a certain amount of school I have to do. And then I get out there, I get up, and I'm allowed to plan my day. And she'll check up with me weekly, and she'll tell me I can't do extra things if I'm not caught up. And then it gives me freedom. If I work really hard, I can do the next week's school or part of the next week's school, so I won't have as much. I know I'm going to be busy.
So it seems like it helps you develop a good sense of self-responsibility. Yep. and time management as
well. It really does.
I'm curious how people react when you tell them that you're homeschooled.
Well, I think it's more common now. So some of the adults have been, some people have been like, homeschooled, what does that even mean?
That was Isaiah Riker. He's a homeschooled 17-year-old in Ames. And I was interested with Isaiah's comment about having to sit at the ISU classes and how that was different and new. And it just rung a bell because, you know, so many kids, especially at a younger age, just are not ready to sit still. And in fact, a lot of child development experts will say that at that age, for second, third grade, they really should be running around. That's how they learn. So, and then as a result of them not being able to sit still, they are labeled and so forth. So I found that interesting.
And also the importance of choice. And I think, I don't know if you heard the first story, which was on the environmental projects that some students at Ames High are doing. But that teacher who's organizing those talked about that, how in most schooling, students don't have choice to pick big projects and follow them through long term. And we hear Isaiah talking about the importance of that. Thoughts on what he had to say?
Well, we homeschooled our kids, too. And also church schooled them. So they've been three different environments. A very small church school that was the Ames Baptist School out there in Lincoln Way. And then they finished up at Grandview Park Baptist down in Des Moines, which is exactly 40 minutes from our house because I drove it many, many, many times. So they had a wide variety. But the reason we started is one day I was reading a book by Henry Morris about education for the real world, and he pointed out that as a father of a children, I was responsible for what they were being taught. And that just struck me like mad because I couldn't control what they were being taught if they went to a public school. And I was going to be held responsible when I see the Lord in heaven. And it just hit me. And we decided then we were going to homeschool the kids, at least for the first few years.
Okay. Sarvinder, any thoughts on Isaiah's perspectives?
Well, I really liked the freedom point that he brought up. I like homeschooling because it does offer a choice, and I think that's really important to have choices out there to suit yourself, your individual family, how you want them to be raised, what you think is right. I just think it's really nice to have choices.
In doing some background research on homeschooling and in talking to people about it, I'm struck by the role that women have played in it, because it seems that it's usually the mother who takes up the bulk of the responsibility.
Absolutely.
And I see both of you nodding, and that's what you've found. So it's really interesting that the role that gender and mother plays in this. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, I wrote a whole paper on it. I've been in the history PhD program at Iowa State, and I wrote a whole paper, a semester paper on it. And yes, I can tell you that many times in the fall I would get calls from moms, and they'd say, little Johnny came home today, and I asked him, what did you learn today? He said, well, we talked about if four or five of us were in a boat and we ran out of food, which one we would kill to eat. And mom was shocked. It was back when we had values clarification, one of the many fads in education. And she would go to the school and say, what are you teaching my son? Well, you can come to the school board meeting and complain. She would do that. And the superintendent, who was always male, would hear her out and say, well, there, little woman. We know better than you what to teach your children. And a homeschooler was born. because the moms wouldn't put up with it. And yes, the moms did. And you look at the history of education in Iowa, women played a huge role. After the Civil War, the percentage of teachers that were women opposed to men about tripled or quadrupled because all the men were killed in the war. So Iowa's got a tremendous history. The early schools were all run by women who were basically entrepreneurs. They'd go set up a shingle and rent a building, and the local farmers would hire them, and they set their own fees and everything. The first school built in Iowa was a woman – well, the second one. Berryman Phillips built the first one in 1830. The second one was probably 1834, and it was a woman who built the first school out in I think Keokuk or some in that area. So women have always played a big role, and the homeschool movement was – it would have failed without the women because they did the teaching.
Well, absolutely, and I think the reason is kind of obvious because usually the males were out working and, you know, earning the money. And so, I mean, and then traditionally the women take care of the children, you know.
Well, and that's my argument for literacy. The women were teaching their kids to read at home. In the early history of Iowa, that's where really homeschooling started, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And what are the – maybe this has to be our last question as we need to wrap up. What are the most common objections that are – or criticisms of homeschooling that
socialization.
Are
Socialization.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That young people need to be socialized in settings where they're around other children and so on.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah.
Okay.
The studies have been done now. Brian Ray has done some huge, large sample studies of how homeschoolers are doing today because we've had it long enough that they're out there in the real world. And they're doing fine. They're participating in the community. They're mayors in the towns. They're doing just fine. The argument against homeschooling really is it's because people don't think that students are properly socialized well. What they mean by that is they're not trained to be good I'll show my political proclivities, good Democrats. And I can show you a couple of law review articles that argue that. And so that's the problem. All the other studies, I read over 50 PhD theses on this issue, and not one of them found that there was a problem with do the kids get along, can they handle the modern world, do they make friends, et cetera. Not one of them found a problem.
Thank you both for being here and for talking with us about this topic and your experiences. And I'm sure there's a lot more that you could say about it, both historically, Craig, and about your experiences, Sarbinder. But thanks for sharing them with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, yes.
Thanks.
And we just wanted to give a little more information about a couple things going on this week for the Ride Your Bike to Work Week. On Tuesday, there's a handlebar happy hour at Mucky Duck Pub on South Duff Avenue with specials for cyclists. That's from 5 to 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, there'll be refreshments and conversation with fellow cyclists at the Bike Commuter Pit Stop at the Skater Park at Brookside Park on 6th Street. This is organized by Bike World, and that's Wednesday at 7 to 9 a.m. And then there are other things going on, including a cinema night at KHOI on Saturday night. And there'll be more information on that. I'm sorry, Friday night, May 22nd from 6 to 8. And there's more information on all of this and links on our website.
We want to thank Mike Todd and his students from Ames High School who told us about their environmental projects, which are quite amazing. William Buttermore, Brandon Johnson, Macy Myers, Aston McNace, Travis Jurgens, Sarah Nogle, and Haley Debit. Thank you, and congratulations on great work.
And thanks to Shelley Larson, who was with us via taped interview, as well as Isaiah Riker, who also allowed us to interview him in advance. And thank you especially to Sarbinder Naberhaus and Craig Hastings, who joined us in the studio to share their experiences and perspectives on homeschooling.
Local Talk was engineered by Rick Morrison. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music that you heard was Chuck Berry.
That's right.
School Days or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible.
Your participation as an audience and your generous donations make it work. Thanks from Gail Seiler and Greta Anderson, your co-hosts for today. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.